Hi everyone, and welcome to the Ref 6 weekly podcast and vlog. Today I'm joined by John and Carl. Carl, do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name's Carl. I'm a level 7 referee, but have been for 17 years.
Wow.
Alongside that, also manage in the Mid-Sussex League, but generally kids football and some adult football at the weekend in Sussex.
Brilliant. Thanks for joining us today. This week is going to be a little bit different to previous weeks because there was so much that happened in and around either the Premier League or at least games that were recorded over the weekend. So we've got a load of small different incidents that we want to touch on and give kind of the referee's opinion, or at least our three opinion on those incidents. So we'll talk about them. In terms of news, there's a few different pieces of news. Last week we mentioned that Ovi Hatagan, the Romanian referee, had made history by being the first referee to get 5 matches in the Champions League. It turns out that he got his 6th match, so he will be the first referee to do every game of a Champions League group stage, which is amazing. And then there was also a debut for, and I'm just going to get the name up, a French referee in the Champions League this week. He becomes the 3rd youngest referee to officiate in the Champions League. And his name is, and I'm definitely going to say it incorrectly. No, maybe not. François Letexier. He's a French referee. He's 31 years old, 7 months and 16 days. So makes me very sad because he's younger than me. But he is the 3rd youngest official. Michael Oliver was the 2nd, and Ovi Hatagan actually refereed, and he's the youngest referee when he made his debut a few years back. So pretty great to see new referees getting blooded on the Champions League, as well as Ovi Hatagan making that kind of milestone as well in terms of 6 matches. So I mentioned we had lots to talk about, so let's just dive straight in. We're all from or in and around Brighton, and there was a game last night in the Premier League where Brighton welcomed their fans back against Southampton. And late in the game, there was a foul by Solly March on Kyle Walker-Peters. David Coote was the referee and decided the foul was outside the box, gave a free kick. And a few seconds turned into minutes where VAR decided to intervene and award a penalty for the fact that a foul happened inside the box rather than outside the box. So firstly, what are your thoughts? Did you think first, was it a foul? Do you want to go, Carl?
I think almost looking back at it, also with Carragher afterwards, it seemed to be he was sort of stating there were 2 fouls. I think there was definitely a little arm in the back, which for me looked like it happened outside the area.
Yeah.
And I think when you look back at the footage and you see David Coote spray his mark, he's a good 2-3 yards outside. So for me, I don't think there's any doubt in his mind it's outside the area.
Yeah.
Obviously, then the two boys fall into the area, and I don't know if the VAR have given the penalty for the second part of that foul, which again for me it looked like as Walker-Peters was pushed through the back by March, his legs came through the sort of come through the back of March and caused him to fall over.
Yeah,
I think for us as referees or even as fans, I think the frustrating thing is A, how long it took. Just about 2 minutes of debating, but also not knowing. I mean, obviously, we're referees. We probably have an insight into what's going on. But I think there needs to be some form of communication with people watching to understand what's going on. Are they debating whether it's inside or outside? Are they debating whether it's the first foul or the second foul?
Yeah.
I think that would just make things a lot clearer for me anyway.
Yeah. I mean, look, I can't wait for there to be a time like in rugby where you can actually hear the conversations, right? I think that's really the next step. I don't think the officials are quite ready. They're still getting used to using the technology, let alone then having to communicate effectively through, you know, a live feed to fans. But I agree with that. I think there's an opportunity there to make it a little bit more transparent. John, you thought it was a foul or you weren't sure?
I thought it was a foul.
Yeah.
I've seen it a few times, usually because I've only watched it in like one sitting. I didn't watch the game live. It just looked like he flipped him on the way through. I said straight away it was a free kick. Like you say, where the referee shaped up, it looked like he was given a free kick and he was pretty happy with it. I'm assuming from the assistant's point of view as well, he was saying outside the box.
Because
That's usually the comms they give. Like when I'm talking to my assistants on a match day, I say, take a step out of the box for me so I can definitely sell the free kick straight away or run towards the penalty spot. Because then I know for a fact it's inside, outside, I can sell it straight away. Mm-hmm. So they probably both come together and said it's outside. The frustrating thing is we didn't know. Nobody knew what was going on. Yeah. And I think it makes it worse that someone was saying that it was on the TV.
Yeah.
So Solly March is screaming, that's outside.
Yeah.
And obviously, it's not the referee's decision either. He hasn't gone to the monitor to have a look.
Yeah.
It's taken out of his hands, which I think is a bit frustrating for him.
So that was one of the questions I got asked by a Brighton fan who's not a referee, but just a fan, wanted my input. That was correct that the referee didn't go to view the monitor because it was what's deemed to be a factual decision. It's either inside or outside the box, just like offside, right? So that was correct that the referee didn't go to the screen. It wasn't a subjective call. I think the video that I've seen, I was pretty, as I was watching it, and I don't know if I was just winding my Brighton friends up, but I was definitely saying, I think this is going to be a penalty. And I just don't know if that, I don't know if clear and obvious kind of comes in here because it's a factual decision. Like I said, it's not a subjective call. So from the VAR Peter Banks' perspective, he's deemed that whether it be the first or the second or has the foul continued into the box, he's just deemed that wherever the contact of the foul was, it was inside the box. And I think that's all we can say on that without knowing or speaking to the officials. The one thing, John, I think is important for those listening, and it comes back to everything I think we've talked about over the last few weeks around pre-match conversation, is your assistant referee plays a massive part here. If you're pre-match, in your pre-match as a referee, you tell them, like John said, if you think it's a foul, take a few steps away from the penalty area up the pitch, then all of a sudden you've become that visual aid to the referee because you have the best view, actually. The assistant has the best view out of everyone because they're side on, they can see where the players are. And if you think it's a penalty, get down to that corner flag, and that's another visual aid to the referee. So as I'm blowing the whistle as a referee, if I'm looking at my assistant, I know now if I'm just putting my arm up for a free kick or if I'm pointing to the spot. So that's definitely something to take and learn from it. But yeah, one of the things, Carl, you mentioned, it'd be great to listen to the conversation. I think that's got to come eventually. So cool. Overall, everyone thought it was a foul. Whether or not it was inside the box or not, I'm not 100% clear on. But obviously the angles were there for the VAR on that particular day. So we're going to move on to another controversial goal that was awarded to Man United against West Ham. For those who haven't seen it, the ball was with Dean Henderson, the Man U goalkeeper. He plays a long pass towards Bruno Fernandes, who passes the ball into Pogba, who scores a pretty great goal. The controversy here was that the ball from Dean Henderson to Fernandes looked, or at least was, but from West Ham's perspective, it felt as if, or the appeal was that the ball had gone out of play and swung back in to play. So loads of myths I want to go into in terms of what I've seen on social, but again, talk me through your thoughts. John, do you want to go? Do you, from what you've seen, do you think it was out or in?
I'm pretty undecided. I'd probably say in. I think it's one of those things as an assistant, you don't realise how much goes on until you do it.
Yeah.
Like at that time, when Dean Henderson's got the ball and he looks like he's going to pump it, the first thing that I would do as an assistant is look along the line, because if somebody's offside and that ball's pumped over the top, then obviously that's a game-changing decision. And then you look back and then, or you look up and see if it's gone out. So your head is almost on a swivel all the time. And the closer it is to your side, the much harder it gets.
Yeah.
And I feel like everyone was like, all you need to do is look up. But it's not just that simple, is it? You're looking for if there's a push, if there's a pull, is there an offside, is there a foul in there, as well as the ball going out. And yeah. to be fair to him, probably the ball going out of play is the last thing he's worrying about.
Yeah, and for me, Carl, I'll let you in a second. For me, the toughest thing about this decision, it does look like the assistant referee is looking at the ball as he's running. Definitely gets a couple of glances in. The key issue is the ball's quite high up in the air. It might be, I don't know, I can't know, 20 yards in the air, let's say. I don't know, 15 yards. I don't know. Never thought about it at that level. But all of a sudden, you're looking up, and it's really hard to have a visual kind of cue because the line's not there because you're looking up in the air. You don't have that line to see, is it in or out? The only thing I can think about is maybe, is that ball behind me? Does it feel like it's behind me or in front of me? That's really the only way you can make that decision. Carl, what did you think about the whole incident?
Well, being a United fan, I obviously prayed that they weren't going to call it back on VAR. But you could see, as John was saying, the lino, I think, was expecting, he probably wasn't expecting Henderson to put so much whip on it. Mm-hmm. He sort of starts off racing off and sprinting down the line, and you sort of see him have a little look over his shoulder and then probably realises, oh, heck, that's actually sort of gone out of where it should have been. I'm not in a position to give that now. And it was really interesting watching it back on the highlights that quite a few players stopped. Mm-hmm. Wan-Bissaka stopped. I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer looked like he stopped, and obviously Moyes was just going apoplectic on the sideline.
Yeah.
But I think there was no way in that situation he could have been confident that had gone out.
Yeah.
And from a coach's perspective, you'd want your players to play the whistle. It still carried on probably another 10 seconds after that before Pogba put it in the back of the net. But I think it's one of those, as an assistant, if you're not sure, you can't give it. Possibly looking at player reaction, if a lot of people have stopped and you suddenly haven't put your flag up, it's then going to look bad if you suddenly do play the flag. And being a level 7 referee, I tend to have subs or other random strangers running the line. So they probably wouldn't have been confident to give that at all.
The funny thing you said that, and it's a good observation about players stopping, I found like the attacking players for Man U at least didn't stop. It didn't even enter Fernandez's mind that it could have gone out of play, which makes me, I'm just not convinced. There's a few things here that I heard over the weekend that I wanted to talk about. So David Moyes says it's 100% out. The challenge with David Moyes is he was 3 or 4 yards. He was in his touchline, in his area. His what's the word? What's it called? The team area. I forgot. Technical area. That was the word I was looking for. He was in this technical area. He's not in line with the ball. In line with the line, you can't make a decision if the ball's out of play or not from there. And I don't think so. The second piece that I'd like to clear up from a myth perspective is, VAR has no, the only thing that they can access in terms of ball in and out of play is camera angles. They don't have the ability or the technology to put over like overlays of lines to show where the ball is in relation to that line. So it's not like goal line technology where they have, I think it's like 14 or 12 cameras aimed at the goal. They don't have that on the touch lines. So they haven't got that. All they can do is look at the camera angles or the feeds from the TV and make a decision. And it only looks like there was only one or two angles that were completely inconclusive. You can kind of say maybe, you can kind of say maybe not. And then there was a few others where I've seen images on social media where they've had a big blue kind of wall, which is put up. And I think BBC put that on. And the key thing to note for those who are watching is, that is just a graphic overlay that has been put on by the media company, to which there is no calibration. It's a massive estimate of where that, what that looks like, because you can't do that on a 2D image. So it's very, very difficult. I don't believe in any of the images that I've seen that show it's actually technically out or not. I think you could actually just, the way you edit those images, you could say it's in and you can say it's out. So the question here is really, should, and I don't think it will ever happen, or at least not yet until technology becomes cheaper, but maybe that's something in the future from a technology perspective that could be introduced, is did the ball go out of play or not? That's the easiest way to do it, like similar to a goal line. So again, there is a lot more challenge around that. There is no crossbar. So all of a sudden you've got to be looking all the way up, and yeah, it becomes challenging. Overall, in my personal opinion, I'm not 100% sure it's out. I'm not 100% sure it's in. So the on-field decision has to stand in that situation. And the assistant referee is much more competent than I am and that most people are in terms of making that decision. So, cool. So those are the two controversial or fairly controversial incidents from the Premier League. The third one that I wanted to touch on was Millwall. So this weekend in England, fans were allowed back into stadiums in the country. Millwall were playing Derby in the Championship, and as been the case in many elite games, the players and the referee take a knee before the game. What happened during this, and they only take a knee for about 8 seconds, and during that time, the Millwall fans, or some Millwall fans, were booing that gesture. So I don't want to get into the ramifications of were they correct or not to boo the incident. What I want to know is what goes through our mind as referees during that time, and do we should it make any have any impact on the way we're about to referee a game? So John, do you want to talk about your thoughts? Like if that were to happen in your game, what are you thinking?
That's tough in terms of like your game, because it's not technically your job, is it, in terms of it's not your responsibility. But if a player came up to you and said, I'm now uncomfortable, then it becomes your problem. Mm-hmm. Because you're there for the players. And I remember this being a big thing when England got booed, or Tyrone Mings got booed
in Bulgaria.
Is that what it was? There's a big process that you have to go through. So for us, I'm pretty sure for me at level 4 it'd be the same thing. I'd go over to the chief steward and say, like, this is not unacceptable. And from my level, it's probably easier to pick out people doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a better process and making sure the player gets comfortable. But we had this, I think we spoke about this the other week, and if a player said that he wanted to walk off, like, he was uncomfortable with that, then there's not a lot I can do. I'd support him if I thought that he was uncomfortable. And yeah, it's if nothing gets said before the game, you have, I feel like I'd have to take it with a pinch of salt. But as soon as a player then tells me he's uncomfortable, then it becomes an issue.
Yeah. It's a really tough one. I think the first, for me, I think the key thing as a referee to know if a player doesn't come up to you is to note that the first few minutes of that game, the tensions may be raised, right? Because the players may feel, some form of negative effect of that. And it might raise the temperature of the game straight away. Possibly. It's not definite. It's a possibility. Cole, what about yourself? You said you're a manager too. If a player came over and let's say you were there, in, the manager of of Derby or even Mill, and that a player came over, what are your conversation with that player going to look like?
I think obviously you've got to, as John said, you've got to respect the player's decision. It's hard to pick out without getting into political arguments, because that's not what this is for.
Yeah.
It was hard to pick out what they're booing for. Sure. And I know in their game tonight against QPR, there's a massive sort of anti-racism viewpoint to it, and they're all changing their kits and doing that to sort of spin that. But I think if a player was feeling uncomfortable, as much as I could try and persuade them to carry on, it's sort of their viewpoint. If they're not wanting to take part because they're feeling upset or it's too much, and I think you have to believe, you have to sort of accept their rights, that they have the right to do that. I think the referees are in a tricky position where it's up to the managers or the clubs before the game to decide whether they're doing that, take the knee or not, rather than having a sort of set, we are doing this, because obviously that's open to interpretation. I've only come across it once at an under 13 game where one team requested to do it, the other team weren't quite sure about what was going on, so it was more of that educating about why that happened, which I think at that level is quite handy as well. Sort of to bring up the anti-racism campaign more so for the younger viewpoint. But yeah, certainly the referee's got his hand tied in that one. Having, although there's only 2,000 fans, it would be hard to pick out exactly who was
doing it. Definitely. Yeah, and I think we must reiterate, almost certainly wasn't 2,000 fans, all the fans, but there was definitely a section. The key, I'm going to throw a different one out. We've talked about players who are really they're under our stewardship, but they're free to make their own decisions. What if I'm your assistant referee on that day, and I go, Carl, John, I'm sorry, mate, this has completely just ruined my mindset. I'm not sure I'm up for this anymore. I just thought of that on the spin, so I should have mentioned it before. What's going through your mind then? Because I'm adamant. I'm not gonna run a great line for you now. I'm completely gone. What's the best thing for you to do in that situation? Would you be considering, okay, as a team, let's all come off and show us solidarity? Is that okay? Wow, I need to find a new assistant referee now. Like, you know, I've just thrown this at you. So this, you got to think on your feet. This is going to happen. This could happen on a Saturday. So John, you go for it. You seem like you're.
I'm ready for this. It's a bit like an injury, I think. If he's not ready to do it and doesn't feel like he's going to do it, we all walk off and inform the managers that we are walking off because somebody feels uncomfortable. And then I'd get the managers in and say, this is the situation. Obviously, I'd talk to the assistant first and say, look, it doesn't matter, we'll find someone from the crowd and we'll replace you. Because I'd rather you be comfortable in the changing room and stay here for 90 minutes than go out there and feel uncomfortable. Because the last thing that I want him to do is feel like he's being attacked from everywhere, because it's not just that he won't run a great line, but he'll also be very anxious, him or her will be very anxious all the way through. Mm-hmm. If their mind's not with it, then fair play. Like, we all walk off and then we deal with it in the changing room. I've got no issues with that. It'd be like, I treat it as if it was an injury. Obviously it's not the same, but the principle is we all go off, we deal with it away. To give everyone peace of mind. And then if I need to go to the tunnel and say, can I have an assistant referee? So be it.
Cool. Very interesting. Go on, Carl. Did you have anything to change on that, or would you do it differently?
No, I think John is spot on there. And I think having that time away from the situation may help that assistant sort of think things through in the nicest, in sort of the way, and thinking, It may be something that with a team effort can help to come through. But at the end of the day, it's their decision. If they're not feeling comfortable, the last thing we want to do is put them up against 10 fans, 1,000 fans, 50,000 fans in a stand. That's going to make them feel more anxious or against what their beliefs and their feelings are.
Yeah. No, I think it's a very... interesting time at the moment. I think the fact that these conversations are being had are really important. Cool. Thanks for your
input. What would you do, Hassan?
Look, I obviously feel very strongly about this subject. I've kind of said it before, and that this. If it was, let's say I'm the referee, because then I can make the decisions here, right? I probably would feel personally uncomfortable. And I'm very happy to be the person that sets an example and falls on my own sword here. So I may be in my head considering personally walking off the pitch and saying, look, I don't feel that response to that gesture was the right thing in this arena, right? This is my job, technically, right? And I don't feel comfortable performing to my job in that type of environment. Let's just say that. So I would be considering, I'm not saying I would definitely do it, I would be considering maybe here's an opportunity to make a stand, make a point, and walk off. The thing that would possibly get to me was if I was the only person with that opinion, it may make it extremely hard for me to make that decision. If a player or two came up to me and said, wow, I'm not, you know, not necessarily saying I'm going to walk off the pitch now, but hey, wow, that wasn't great, was it? Or that didn't feel comfortable. Then that might make it even easier for me, but I would be considering it. I don't know if I would do it. I don't know if I'd be brave enough to do it. I'd like to think I might be, but I'm not sure. The one thing I did hear was Liam Rossini, who's the Derby, I think he's a coach or assist. I think he's the coach, not the assistant, who said it was extremely uncomfortable for him on the sideline. And as a coach, you know, he's like the assistant referee. He doesn't really, he can maybe voice his opinion to Wayne Rooney, who was the manager. I don't know if Wayne was actually playing or not, but he was the manager for the day. Yeah, how weird does that sound? Wayne Rooney is manager. You know, like I said, I think that I'm glad conversations are being happened about it. But yeah, I think we as referees have got to be a little bit, have got to think about these things, because a lot more things are happening that are very different to the norm. And we've got to have a plan or a process in place should any of these things happen. Sadly, I think is the key. But let's move on. Let's move on to another subject. So we've got two from abroad. There were some really interesting clips that, you know, have got shared around social media. And the one I'm going to start with is in Germany. So it was Stuttgart against Werder Bremen. And it was quite a calamitous goal that led to this specific incident. But basically, a defender had tried to pass it back to his goalkeeper or something, or vice versa. It's ended up at an attacker's feet, who basically has 18 yards of him and the ball and an open net. And he walks up. And he takes a lot of time to then get to the goal line and then just thumps the ball in the back of the net. The Werder Bremen team and the players, the defenders, started to, you know, crowd the attacker. And basically, you know, they felt disrespected by the fact that the guy didn't just pass the ball into the back of the net. He took his time and kind of showboated. I think, John, you like the word shithousery on that one, right? Yeah. You know, it was quite funny. What proceeded was the referee then gave the striker a yellow card. And, you know, I haven't seen, or I don't know if it's been documented on what the reason for the yellow card is. I can only speculate. But yeah, keen to talk about this one, because this is not one I've seen before. And really, what do you think the referee gave a yellow card for? Do you want to go, Cole?
Probably going to be under the unsporting behaviour, lack of respect viewpoint, which I can see it in two minds, or three as a player, coach and official. I think the fact that it was only the second goal, so they went two up with that in the 91st minute, so there was only a couple of minutes to go. I think if it had been 7 or 8 nil, I think there's definitely a lack of respect. And as the term John said, I wasn't sure I was allowed to use that term on here, but definitely a bit of shithousery going on with them. And I think the referee could obviously see that. I think there was one player that went absolutely storming towards the striker after he scored, yeah, and started getting in his face. And I think at that point, the referee's gone, oh, hang on, I've got a bit of a problem here. Mm-hmm. I've got to be almost not seen to be doing something about it. Because I guess if he then doesn't produce a yellow, then are the opposition team going to be thinking, well, hang on, do you agree what he's done there?
Yeah.
Again, I suppose as a referee, you've got to think, is it going to cause any animosity? Mm-hmm. Has it been one of those games already? 91st minute, 2-0. I don't know if I think as soon as the big number 9 comes running towards him, I think the bloke himself has realised what he's done and probably regretting that. But it was, I think it was it Balotelli that did it for Man City once and just got hauled off by Mancini? You know, I think he tried to backheel the ball in the back of the net and just got hauled off. So I think the manager could have had something to do with that situation as well. I think I had a player that we were winning, I think, 14-0 at one point. And he started. I said, just calm down, stop showboating. And the next thing he said, he's just controlled it with his shoulder and shouldered it down. So I just went, ref, sub, please, and just pulled him off straight away. And I think the coaches in that situation have probably got something to do with it as well. And the ref has probably felt that he's had to do something to show, not solidarity as such, because obviously there is the yellow card for unsporting behaviour. Mm-hmm. Would I have booked him? Probably so.
Okay.
Really?
But probably had a little chuckle with him on the sideline without anyone seeing.
Interesting. Okay. No, that's cool, because I'm going to be honest, I don't think I can find a yellow card there myself. Yes, unsporting behaviour gives you kind of a wide remit to give a yellow card, right? for me, some people were questioning, well, hold on, if they gave him a yellow card, when did the unsporting behaviour occur? Was it prior to that ball crossing the line, and should it have been a free kick? Which would have been a completely bigger story, I guess. And you know, John, you go while I get my thoughts on this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of things probably going through the guy's head. Like you said, it's the 91st minute, so a little bit of time wasted in there in terms of his walk to the goal line, which
I was expecting him to get on his feet and then head the ball in.
I was ready for that. Then I would have been more annoyed. Like I think he's tried to waste a little bit of time, smash it in the back of the net, make it difficult for the defenders to pick it up again. Like, I think it's part and parcel of the game. I think what's made it worse is the striker, or the number 9, I think it was, has come steaming in.
Yeah.
And if I was the referee, as controversial as this could sound, I'm booking the guy that's come steaming in for adopting an aggressive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't find a yellow card for him. Like, he's not delayed the restart because he's walked straight away. He's
The ball's in play.
So the only yellow card I saw, and when I first watched it, I thought that the guy that came steaming in had got booked.
Yeah.
Not the guy that was time wasting or whatever it was for.
Yeah.
And that's where that's what I thought the yellow card process would have been for him.
Yeah.
Because I'm king of the shit houses. And I can't find it. I not endorse that style of play, but I'm happy for it to be part of the game.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, the one thing, Cole, that you mentioned, which was interesting, that may help, was it a temperature cooling yellow card, whereby, you know, the referee has seen that it's absolutely caused havoc amongst the other players, that the punishment of a yellow card kind of subdued the rest of the players and it was saving him the last couple of minutes. That maybe I can kind of get on board with that, possibly. But I think the other player should have got a yellow card too. I think if you're going to do it, maybe both. Again, I can't find a yellow card for the striker, but if in my mind, that may help me cool the rest of the temperature down of the other players, maybe I could get there. But I think I'd also have to give a yellow card to the defending team's player that ran in as well. So yeah, really interesting one though. Definitely like a very interesting goal in itself, because it was, yeah, you're normally the players tapping that in the back of the net and running off and celebrating. This guy took, you know, a few extra seconds than was needed. Cool. And then the last one that I wanted to chat to you guys about again was in literally the last minute of the game in Sweden. And it was AIK against Elfsborg. I need to work on my pronunciation, I'm sure. But I think this shows actually that, you know, you can't switch off. It's going into the last few minutes. You've got to really pep yourself up as a referee and make sure your spidey senses are right back up, right? You know, don't switch out. Don't look at, 85 minutes on the clock. Cool, I can coast the last five. That should be the time where you actually try and referee more than you've been refereeing the rest of the game, possibly. Or just have that spidey sense up. But let me describe what happened. It was 93rd minute. It was 2-2. And I believe... I just wonder if it was a cup game or not, but I'm pretty confident the goalkeeper
for
AIK was up. So it must have been some form
of... I love that. That was the best thing about that clip.
they must have needed a goal. Whether it was a cup game, there was an aggregate, or they just needed to win for the... I don't know. And we, you know, we should have done some more research on that, but the goalkeeper was up. So what's happened? So the corner has come in for the white team, AIK. And an attacker's gone up to head the ball, and it's just gone completely wide of the goal. But the ball's gone off the pitch and ended up with the corner taker. In that time, the goalkeeper has run behind his goal, found another ball, placed it down on the goal area, and taken a quick goal kick. The yellow team, Elfsborg, are attacking, having this quick counter-attack with the goalkeeper running back. potentially about to shoot and score a goal in an open net. It would have been some hit if he did it. There was a few people in the way. But the corner kick taker had this ball still and basically decided to hit the ball in the direction of the player with the active ball going on, right? Has this ever happened in any of your games? It's never happened to me.
Not quite. I've had someone in a six-a-side game push a goal over, but never quite. Again, rounded the keeper, he just shoved the goal out of the way to stop the ball going crossing the line, technically. But never another ball on the pitch like that, no.
No, brilliant. John, what about you?
Yeah, I have. Obviously, Hassan, you'll know this. I don't know if you'll know this, Carl, but Waterhall is like a massive field of football pitches.
Mm-hmm.
And one ball is pumped over into another and you're in sort of like, oh dear, here we go. And it is a bit of a weird one because you're like, oh, hang about. Because you don't know whether to stop it. Is it over there? Is it there? It is a bit of a tricky one to deal with.
But have you ever had like a player from a team try and do something like this situation? Probably not.
No, but I love the sort of creative, like, intention. Like, he really has tried to
it was a great hit. It was definitely stopping a promising attack. There's definitely I'm just watching it back now, it wasn't even the corner kick taker. It was the corner kick taker had like passed it off to leave it on the pitch and running back, and there was one of the strikers has kicked it back.
I thought the corner kick taker had looked like he'd taken the goal kick and then was running with the ball.
Yeah.
I thought he'd played on and I was like, oh my God, what's going on here?
It was a crazy one. So look, again, the incident, the referee did exactly what was meant to happen. I wanted to throw this out there and just quiz you, I guess, a little bit. If that was the manager of the opposition team who did it, there is a correct answer on this. What should the sanction be?
John, do you want to go with this one?
I'm going to go with, I don't know, I'm sending him off.
It is a red card.
Okay, thank God.
There is something in the laws that state if it's the manager or any team official, it could be a substitute, kicks the ball and interrupts a player. It's the same thing as if the manager came on and tripped up a player. It's not part of their jurisdiction and they should not be doing that. So yeah, just crazy incidents all around, I think, this weekend. A lot of different variations. Cole, I'm gonna ask you a couple of questions if that's okay. You mentioned that you're a manager. Is it a youth team or an adult team?
Both. I've managed a youth team, but now I'm with Newark.
Okay, so as a referee as well, like, how much are they two completely different hats, or do you try and ensure your players are on their best behavior amongst referees because you're part of that fraternity? Or is it like, hey, no, I'm the manager, I'm doing everything I can to win, and I'm just intrigued by that.
I think there's part of me that if I was to look at myself on a Saturday, I would probably regret some of the things I do, and I always apologize. I know a lot of the guys that turn up at Newark or wherever we are to referee, and I think because obviously being a referee, there's things that I see that I might give as a foul and then isn't given as a foul. That might annoy me more.
Yeah.
But I'm massively annoyed when players get... I've only had one in the sin bin since that came in our level. So I do try and keep them as responsive as possible. Mm-hmm. But if there's any referees in Sussex watching that I have shouted out, I apologise. it's always a little bit of... you step up on that sideline and it's passion more than anything. But...
Do you think, how have your players reacted to sin bins? Like, do you think it's worked? Did you have a problem with dissent before?
Not necessarily with our boys. And again, there's probably people listening that will go, oh yeah, I knew it. Yeah, yeah, we have them in the book. But I don't think we've seen that many even in our league as such. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're only Div 3 South, so we don't see that many in the Mid-Sussex League, that many sin bins going on.
Okay. And is that because the referees aren't giving them, or is that because actually you think the behaviour's got better?
There's a bit of both, and I think John mentioned shithousery. Sometimes I'll be there going, don't forget you can use the sin bin, ref, or is he allowed to say that to you? And sort of using my knowledge to try and...
Yeah.
And
bend the rules a little bit or be fair enough. And the last question I had is, you mentioned that you're a level 7 and you have been for a long time. Really intrigued by that, because there is a thought process amongst some referees that they want to go through the levels as quick as possible, and some are really happy to kind of just referee and be at a level and be happy there. So really keen to understand your kind of your time frame as a level 7. Have you ever considered going for promotion? And if not, why not? Because I think there's some referees who are a level 7 who might feel that pressured that they have to go through promotion because that's the way it's meant to be, quote unquote. I'm not saying it is the way it should be, but really keen to get your thoughts and opinions on that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I sort of, again, being in Newark, I started as a linesman for Newark when I was like 12 or 13.
Okay.
And the league saw a couple of games when there was seven other referees and suggested I took the course on. Mm-hmm. So obviously Newark were a bit annoyed when I was 16. I went off to referee for the whole year. So yeah. I did first year in the Mid-Sussex League. And I remember really enjoying it. I missed the sort of buzz of the changing room or the sideline. Being on your own suddenly as a 16-year-old is quite a scary thing when you've got players going, I've been playing longer than you've been refereeing. And
yeah.
I'm sure we've all been there when you sort of stand there with a yellow card going, sorry, but it's definitely yellow.
Yeah.
And I think I had a couple of observations where I found it frustrating that at that time, I'm sure observations have changed since then, or assessments, sorry, should I say, teacher hat on as well, observations. When he was, I remember one where he was going, you missed a definite handball in the 22nd minute. And I was like, well, that was that the one that just popped up and skipped up? And he was like, yeah. I was like, well, I thought that was just ball to hand or accidental.
Yeah.
And I think that almost, not disillusionized me as such, but made me wonder what I wanted to do with it.
Sure.
I've never been the fittest of blokes. I can run around quite happily.
Yeah, I'll join you on that one. More about that.
I mean, not to quote the product, but Restix normally doesn't tell me I've been running as much as it feels I've been running after a game on a Sunday.
It is accurate. I'm going to say that, Colin. Sorry about that. But
I don't think mine is. doesn't know what it is. Yeah. But I think I then went back to coaching. Uh-huh. And then refereeing on the side when my youth team didn't have a game or anything like that. And since that stopped about 4 years, I've refereed pretty much every Sunday.
Okay.
And I think more because I know how frustrating it is as a coach not to have an official.
Yeah.
I don't know if either of you have ever been sort of refereeing your own team or refereeing a team you know well. Mm-hmm. It's difficult. You're doing a job, but then you're thinking, if I give that penalty, are people going to think I'm giving it because I'm with them or not?
Yeah.
Mm. And I mean, my partner, bless her, we're supposed to get married this year, hates me going out on a Sunday morning to go and referee. And I've said to her all the time, I get good feedback from these coaches of teams around this area. I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing. I enjoy what I do on a Sunday morning. It gives me a little run around. But I look at some of the referees in lower league, and even when I go and watch sort of Hayward Teeth and people like that, and think I could probably do a job here.
Yeah.
But there's something about park football, as John said, the sort of shithousery. I'm getting that word as much as possible now, I'm allowed to say it.
Yeah.
Of the sort of adult football on Saturday. And Sunday is not so much. There's only so many times you can be sworn at on a Sunday morning by some hungover bloke in the middle. But
I feel like, so when I was growing up, I played Sunday League. And Sunday League has had a bad rep for being, like you said, a hungover league in terms of, you know, players gone out. And, you know, I don't think that's changed much. But what I will say the last few years that I've noticed is the players actually want to play. You know, there's so many different things that you can be doing on a Sunday morning, whereas in the past there was less. Sunday league football was a lot bigger than it is now. But what I think is the people who are playing now, you know, they've got up. They wanted to come and play today. And I feel like the behaviour's got better. You know, the standard of football hasn't. But it's... I find Sunday League football is probably the most community-feeling football that exists. And what I mean by that is, like, all the teams know each other, the players know each other, and you get to know them, and you'll probably referee the same teams 3 or 4 times a year. So those who have given up Sunday League football over the last few years, it's definitely something to reconsider. There's definitely a shortage of referees at the moment. But I feel like the behaviour has got better. Do you think that's true, Carl? John, have you done much Sunday League recently or not? You see, you're one of them who's given it up.
Yeah, I when I was, like you said at the start, I was 16 when I went through the system quite quickly. I ended up doing reserve team county league football at 17, and I took a year out when I was at uni. But yeah, I've never really done Sunday league. I flew off, and then I've been quite lucky enough that I'd be promoted quite quickly, and yeah, I've been doing county football for quite a while now. So yeah. Sunday league is something I quite like, as in, like, I did a Mid-Sussex game the other week, but it's not something that I've grown up with.
Sure. Yeah, no, I've always done Sunday league, mainly because I live in a town where there's about, you know, 8 to 9, maybe 10 pitches within like 2 miles of me. So it was always super convenient. But yeah, definitely for those listening, definitely worth giving it another chance, I would say, is probably a good thing. John, Carl, thanks so much. I think we talked on a load of different topics there. Some, I think, really interesting incidents from this weekend. And thanks so much for being a part of today's show. For those who are listening and watching, next week will be our last podcast for the year. And it's actually a great one. So we got Hope Powell, who's the manager of Brighton Hove Albion's women's team, who play in the Women's Super League. We get her on the line to talk about refereeing stuff. We don't talk about players. We talk about her opinion on referees, how she studies the laws of the game or not, all of the things to do with, you know, getting an elite manager's opinion on refereeing. And it's definitely going to be an interesting conversation, so definitely tune in. And again, for those who are listening, watching on YouTube, please don't forget to give us a like and a subscribe. And those who are listening on the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, give us a review. And yeah, we appreciate you guys spending the time with us. Carl, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Brilliant. And see everyone next week.